Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on September 7th, 2007, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. It's been a long journey, and I'm very happy to be here. This is one of my favorite movie theaters in New York City. And they, amongst a lot of other people, but they've been a real supporter of the film from the first time they've ever seen it. And this is really the introduction to the film, and I hope things continue to grow from here. But I'm really happy that we're here, and I hope you enjoy the film, and I'll be here afterwards, and you can do whatever you want to me afterwards. I'm very uninhibited, so as you will see. Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thank you for staying, and now will you help me welcome back writer, director, and what would we call you, dancer number three with the umbrella, John Turturro.
Thanks for staying. Thanks for coming. I don't know if people will have questions as soon afterwards, but if you do, I'm willing to... Yeah? I had a. The spirit in which we made it is reflected in the film. So yeah, we had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and people were nervous at times, but I tried to help them through it. Yeah, I mean it's what people do in the privacy of their home most of the time, and I just wanted to put a little bit of that on screen. Yeah. No, it was a delight making it. It was really hard, but it was we had a great group of people. So. Yes, sir.
Were the distribution problems solely because of the buyout and the company changing?
Yes, it was. Yes, so the company that had it really loved the film and had tested it, and was a much longer version. It tested really well, and once you get bought with a film like this, it's so different. Joel and Ethan's request, they're the people who helped edit the film and helped me get the money, was to see it with an audience, like with tonight. And when you have two or three film executives seeing a film like this, they just didn't think it was for them. And the price was high, and there were a lot of companies who wanted it, but the price was too high. And it was a long, torturous journey because we had a company that loved the film and was going to release it in 500 theaters. But you never know. We're just starting out right now, and Film Forum, it was the theater I thought would be the best to start with, and there's a lot of other theaters that want to show it too. But I have to be allowed to do that. So
it's hard to see something so artistically unique now, and it would seem
it's not true. It's not every time we've played the film, audience has really liked it. We have champions. Salon.com gave us a fantastic review to New York Times today. It's just about people wanting to do that. And a film like this, you have to have people from the beginning that understand it and that care about it and that want to shepherd it along. But, people are really smart. So it's what you're fed, and that's it. So I wouldn't have stuck with the film if I didn't see it work in a lot of other countries and every screening I've ever had in the States. So that's why I'm still here, a 50-year-old man beating a drum.
How did you get that amazing cast together?
Well, Joel and Ethan thought James would be interesting. We did a reading of it about a month after September 11th with a lot of the same people, and everyone just loved the script, and people were very excited about it. And then there was a problem that James was on the show, and then we had to raise the money. So just people responded to it. Kate was always someone I had in mind because I saw her in Holy Smoke, and she did this little dance and smelled her armpits, and I thought she could be really, maybe she's really the reincarnation of Anne Margaret in Tommy. And yeah, there's a lot of Anne Margaret in this film, so I would have liked to have Anne Margaret too. People just responded. They liked me. They liked Joel and Ethan. And when they read the script, they liked it. And people wanted to do it. And they did it for, you know, very, very little. Once again, no, you know, thinking that we would have a really strong company behind us. And we, you know, we had a certain amount of rehearsal and, you know, dance instruction. I sent them to singing coaches, the people who were afraid to sing along. And we did, you know, rehearse, unlike most films, for weeks. And we did a lot of crazy things in the rehearsal.
As far as the musical choices,
yeah,
what inspired you there? It was so eclectic.
Well, I grew up in a house filled with eclectic music. Everyone had their own private soundtrack. When you live in a small house, everyone needs their own private soundtrack. I couldn't get all of it in there, but I had to also choose what I thought was appropriate for the movie. And there's a few songs that have just, like the Buena Vista Social Club, that's something that's really come out in the last few years, or the Little Water Song. Most of the songs I wanted to have that were songs that were stuck in the people's unconscious, that were lodged in their unconscious, and that's part of their emotional repertoire. The only song I knew I had to have was the first song, because that was a song I grew up with, and I always heard my father singing, and my grandmother was a big Engelbert Humperdinck fan, you know. She couldn't say Humperdinck, she used to say the Humpdink, yeah. So, I like it, that Humperdinck. and that's really an Italian song about, the words, it's a very famous song in Italy, a pop song, and the words, it's a girl song, singing about how much she loves her boyfriend and how true she is to her boyfriend. So they changed the complete meaning of the song when they translated it for Mr. Humperdinck. Yeah, there's just certain things that you just know that have a certain kind of potency. And sometimes the more poppy, or, you know, like Dennis Potter says, the power of cheap music, sometimes the potency of it, you know, really is, you know, you have your own emotional history with that, and you endow it with whatever, wherever you were, whoever you dreamed about, whoever you met, or whatever. And it's a very powerful thing. And, you know, the one thing maybe I added to that was I had the people actually sing most of the time with the songs, so, which people do all the time to get through the day. And I think the less money you have, the more essential sometimes music is to give you a little sense of privacy. It's transportation. You know, I grew up near an airport, and I never went on a plane. When I first moved to that neighborhood from Hollis, when we moved to Rosedale, my family on Sundays, other families did it too, we would go to the airport, and they would let you stand at these glass windows, and you would watch the planes take off. And it was, you know, and then they would come over our house. In those days, the planes flew much lower, and they were much louder, and you just couldn't hear anything, you know. It was like you were in an airfield. But, you know, music was a way of imagining and emotional transportation. So, yes, right there. Yeah. Well, you don't usually see lots of places in New York. New York is really vast, and this is really, that's the Belt Parkway, and that's there's a lot of Queens in there, sections of Queens. So I wanted to show, it's almost sort of like William Eggleston went and photographed all those places. So that was something I was interested in, especially the soft colors of the houses in the 50s, the soft pinks and blues, and all the murals that would always be painted in these little houses. And many of the wallpapers, they always had foreign scenery. You know, it was Japan or Paris or whatever. And of course, you never went there, so... But, you know, that's has an emotional resonance with me. So,
back to the music. Was this a concept that it would be sort of a sing-along?
A concept?
All along? Yeah, like, when you had the idea, did you say, I want them to sing along with the original?
I did a little musical fantasy in my second film, Illuminata, where everyone is, like, singing the playwright's name. Because when you do a play, sometimes you think, well, everyone's going to like it. You're fantasizing. Of course, then they don't. And when I did that, I thought, well, that's exactly how I think. And I didn't know they were going to sing, because originally when I was working on it, I knew that that was going to be the credit song. And then I just was like, wow, that's exactly what someone would do. You know, they would turn the radio on or whatever. And then I wasn't sure if they should lip sync. I didn't always like it when I watched some of the Dennis Potter stuff. I didn't want to separate myself from him on purpose. I wasn't that familiar with it, actually. But once we experimented a little bit with it, I felt we were onto something. And then James had a nice voice. And when I heard him sing it, I said, wow, you know, let's do it this way. And I mean, Kate, we almost used Kate's rendition of the Little Water song. It was excellent. Except Oodle Empress was a little more professional and maybe a little more expressive. I think singers, you know, you watch sometimes actors try to be a great, you know, a dancer or a great singer. And, you know, a dancer or a singer spends 20, 25 years doing that. And there's just no way you can compete with them. But you would like to be that. So I thought the melding of those two things would be very organic and very true to life. So that's it. Just it wasn't. I don't apply concepts to anything. I'm not a concept person. I'm just not. I'm a kind of much more of a visceral person. And then I have to kind of lasso myself, you know. And then I let Joel and Ethan say, "Okay, we have too many songs. We have to cut down some of the songs and things like that." So, yes. Relive one day on the shoot. Well, you know, we had fun a lot of the time. I mean, you know, one of the big problems with Kate was, you know, because she had just had a baby and she was breastfeeding, and she was always asking me, what, you know, should she pump? Should she not pump? You know, and well, I'll tell you. I mean, I don't want to share everything, but there's one of the great things about the sex scene was someone had to hold her because she would have fallen off where she was. She wasn't exactly on top of James. And anyway, the guys were laughing so much, the guys who were helping kind of prop her up, because she had a duck. There was a big crane. And they were, I told them, I said, listen, guys, put towels in your mouths because you just have to. And Kate actually slipped at the end of one of these, because she had a certain amount of dialogue. And I just told her, I said, just, you know, keep going, you know, just like you would do in real life when the man runs out of steam, and just keep going. So, she actually slid and actually sat on the prop guy's head, and he had a towel in his mouth. And it was just a highlight for me of seeing her beautiful big ass on this guy's head with a towel stuffed in his mouth. I was like saying, you could only see something like that, you know, on a movie set. So that's why I make movies, personally, you know, because, it was funny today. I saw this big ad in the New York Times. It was a movie with Clive Owens and Monica Bellucci, and they all have these big guns and this, and she's like this. And I was thinking, like, you know, what is that? You know, I was like, what the, you know, what is that? That doesn't interest me. So, okay, someone else has a question. Yeah, go ahead.
It seems like a lot of people have talked about just kind of the journey that the film's had since actually being made until here. But I heard on the radio, I guess yesterday, that you actually started working on this like back during Barton Fink, which seems like was a good while ago.
Yeah, I had the idea before Barton Fink, actually. Okay. Yeah, it was something that my father said to me, the title, actually. But then during Barton Fink, I went to secretarial school, and I wanted to be typing, and I typed the title of this and the toe scene. I typed the Humperdinck thing, a little bit of the first scene.
So was there anything in particular that kind of had it shelved so long until you disagreed?
No. I would say shelved so long? No. I mean, things have to ferment. Yeah. You know what I mean? Shelved is not the word. They have to ferment. Okay. You know? Yeah. That's, you know. And sometimes the longer you sit on something, the better it is. I mean, sometimes you can have almost too much, too. And in this case, maybe I had more than I even needed. But I just sat on it. I had never even directed a film at that time. And I had been working on Mac. But I knew there was always something there, so I would keep adding to that pile all the time. And then one day I was telling someone about it, and they were laughing a lot. And I said, you know, once I have a little time one year, I took off a year. I had made five movies in a row. And I said, it's time. I want to give this a shot. You know, when I was a kid, I used to kind of crawl down the hallway in my pajamas. I don't know how old I was. And my mom would always be talking to her girlfriends. And so many of the ladies in my neighborhood, you know, went through all kinds of things like this. And I would listen to them all the time. And I was always very impressed with how kind of strong they were to get through these situations. And they were always, they had a great sense of humor. And you know, and truth of the matter is, as I got older, all the men died in the neighborhood. They were all, you know, the black woman, a German woman, a Jewish woman. Every husband died. And all these women were left. And it really kind of made this impression on me. And it was from that and a few other things that it just, that was in my, you know, in my head and that I wanted to explore. But I just kept thinking about it for a while. So it didn't all come together. So right away. Did I answer that? Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Could you expand a little bit on that line that a man ought to...
Yeah, well, my,
two things.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, I was having a very long conversation with my dad. He was very sick, and he was telling me all kinds of things and regrets. And in the middle of this conversation, he said something like that. And I don't know if he said it to kind of justify, you know, his situation or whatever. He grew up in a generation where people equated smoking with romance. You know, it was everybody smoked. Everyone smoked in the movies. And it was the way he said it, kind of in the sense of humor about it. I just kind of lodged in my brain. You know, these things just lodged in your brain. And I was like, romance and cigarettes. I was like, I just couldn't get it out of my brain. And that's why you do things, you know, to explore something. And sometimes, you know, there's a couple little moments in the film where those were the things that propels me. Sometimes the thing that propels you, you can actually even get rid of. You know, so, but it just, it interested me. And, you know, and I basically, I guess he was saying a man should be free to, you know, to be the way he wants to be. You know, he died, he wasn't very old when he died. And, of course, I kind of was robbed of a lot of years with him. But in some ways, I never got to see him get very old. And sometimes I think maybe that was good, you know, or maybe that's, I was trying to make, you know, something positive out of that. But, I don't know. There was just something, the way he said it, lodged in my brain. That's all. Like a pink color. You know? Yes.
Oh, could you
have time for one more question?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you. Could you address your maybe varied feelings about the Roman Catholic Church?
The Roman Catholic Church?
Yeah.
Well, I know from the a Christian paper or something, they gave me an O for this film. It says morally offensive, and I'm very proud of that. I believe very seriously that the profane and the spiritual go side by side. You know what I mean? And that's part of that's a big part of life. And some people, you know, aren't interested, but that actually really interests me. And I'd like to make a movie, you know, about nuns, you know. I think I am going to make one soon. So, but I'm interested in, I'm not, you know, a staunch churchgoer, but the whole ritual of it obviously interests me. And like I said, I like that combination. And that combination, I think, is there's something very true about that. Anyway, I just want to just say, thank you so much for coming. If you like the films, you know, spread the word. If you didn't like it, shut up. You know, and I really appreciate, you know, you coming. I really do. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.